Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 66. On this episode, we are talking about Terminator Genisys. Now, Terminator Genisys is the fifth film and the sixth incarnation of the Terminator franchise. And lots of people were even asking if we really needed another one. And to be fair, this new one is high on explosions, high on Arnold, and probably low on critical thinking. Much less so than the other Terminator films, especially the Terminator and Terminator 2. So we talk about the franchise. I'm joined by Ben Avery and J.R. Forresteros, and Ben Avery gives us what he needs in a Terminator film, a great list, and that, of course, includes lots of Arnold. We talk about our love for Arnold, our love for the franchise, what we did and didn't like about the film, and like always, sometimes some of our reviews are more heavy on review than depth, but we do spend a great deal of time trying to figure out just what happened in this movie and what may come down the road. So we hope you enjoy the conversation. Here it is, episode 66, Terminator Genisys and the Complexities of Time Travel. Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless. Well, right before you got on, JR, I was just reminiscing with Ben that it has been, one, it's been too long since he's been on the show. And two, I was wondering exactly how long that had been. And, you know, Skype basically saves all your call information.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, the last time I had been on was July 20th, 2014. So what? It's almost been, it's been a straight year since Ben's been on the show.
Also, Ben and I have never interacted not on Facebook.
It's true.
Really?
It's Ben, true.
So good to meet you, more or less IRL.
Yeah.
That's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
That's so weird because I thought you had been JR, I thought you'd been on Ben. I say Ben too much.
He was so sketched too because of the movie thing that we just kind of let fall apart.
Yeah.
Oh man.
We were gonna watch Left Behind together, and then both of us decided that was a terrible idea.
Yeah, it was camp season. That's the thing. I was away. Wow.
The greatest idea.
Four different camps in 3 weeks. So.
Well, when you speak about camp season, seems like Left Behind would be an appropriate movie. Because what could be more campy and terrible than that?
It's Thief in the Night for our generation.
Which Thief in the Night is a camp movie. Classic camp movie. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, so the only thing more consistent than probably this podcast is knowing that every couple years there's going to be a new Terminator movie.
Segway.
You see what I did there? I just slid right in there.
That's why you're a professional. That's what you're talking.
That's right. I should put professional segwayist.
Yep. Not
segwist.
Yeah. And be clear. I'd put a picture.
Record all this stuff, don't you? You record all this chit chat, don't you?
Probably.
Probably. I don't know.
It may be recording. I may have been recording for like 30 minutes already. Who knows?
I hope you got where I was like, hey, I'm completely incompetent. Everyone, that you're curious,
listen to my podcast.
Yeah,
I'm the best.
Find out if I recorded one this week.
Oh, why do you ask, Ben?
Oh, it's a sense memory, I think, of last year.
Because he doesn't want his secrets getting out about how he gets his sweet jobs.
How he gets his sweet jobs? No, I typically go back and usually just enough to segue in, which we just had, and then we just kicked out. So now we have to come up with a new segue, but it's okay. Again, professional segwist. So
well, it's time travel, going back, starting over. It's a new beginning with a new ending.
Ben rebooted this podcast. Boom.
It's a total reboot. Yeah.
Boom. Okay, so podcast rebooted. So what would we have done after that amazing Terminator segue? Where would we have gone?
Probably into our history with the franchise, right?
Our history of the franchise? Well, how about before we do the history of the franchise, like, why, well, I guess this might be a part of that question. Why would either of you go see another Terminator movie in the first place?
I love Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I think that's a valid answer.
Like, pretty much at this point, unreservedly. Like, no apologies, no shame.
And that's probably a perfect answer for this particular movie, too.
Yeah, I mean, you got what you came for.
100%.
Yeah. Okay, so if you came for, or if you're unabashedly a Schwarzenegger fan, then does that mean you're going to see all the other things that he's been doing the past, like, year or so? The prison escape movie, the zombie movie, the other movie where he's like a sheriff.
I have seen all of those films.
You have seen all of those films. Yep. Okay, so is Arnold, like, The Rock is that guy for me. Like, I'll go see anything he's in. Well, I will see anything he's in. I don't necessarily pay to see everything he's in, but I will not miss a Rock film. Is Arnold that guy for you?
I will say that I have never seen an Arnold Schwarzenegger film where he is the worst thing in the film.
Okay.
So
that's very calculated of you.
Yeah, I mean, there's some terrible. Last Stand wasn't great. I definitely went and saw that with a couple of my buddies, and we went and saw it in the afternoon so that we were in a very uncrowded theater, and we planned to mock it relentlessly, and we did, and it was fun. Maggie, the zombie film, was actually legitimately fantastic. I don't know if you guys have seen it or not.
Not yet.
Well, I haven't heard that it's fantastic. I've heard that he is.
Well, yeah, he's fantastic.
He's
film,
pretty good in it.
If you're kind of tired of zombie stuff, it's definitely not a zombie film you've seen before. It's pretty slow, and I did not care for the way it resolved. But I was just like, I can't believe that we're getting this level of performance from Arnold Schwarzenegger ever, let alone in his, like, whatever 80s or whatever he's in.
Because you can't really tell.
Yeah, I think he's like 76 or something like that, isn't he?
No, is he?
Is he? I don't know if he's 70 yet. Is he?
I'll look. You got okay, talk you, amongst yourselves. I'll look it up.
You got it. All right, Ben, why are you going to see what is now with the fifth film and the sixth incarnation of the Terminator franchise?
Well, there's a couple answers, and one is I was going to come on the podcast with you.
Now, reason enough, really.
Granted, I would have gone, and we would have done a Strangers and Aliens about this if, or when I say we, I mean I probably would have done a Stranger.
just you,
because my other podcast hosts, they either don't have, you know, maybe it's a money thing where they don't want to spend money on stuff like this, but
which is understandable.
Maybe it's a time thing, they don't want to spend time on stuff like this, but there would have been a Strangers and Aliens about this if I wasn't doing this with you. But the other thing is, it's maybe it's the time travel. Maybe it's the time travel thing.
You just love time travel.
I do love time travel, and I have to say I'm slightly, not as much as, like, say, you know, like the year long ago, you know, when we did the Planet of the Apes, that franchise really invested in. I'm full in on that franchise. I'm invested in the Terminator franchise, though. I mean, T2 hit me when in high school, and it was kind of that perfect movie for where I was and who I was at that time. And yeah, so this is a franchise I'm invested in. I'm interested in, and it's time travel, and it's, you know, it's popcorn time travel. You know, it's
well, but it hasn't always been popcorn time travel, right?
Well, like, I don't know.
I would say
you think so?
Well, here's the thing. I made a list of what I want out of a Terminator movie. Okay. And one thing I want Arnold. Which made the Sarah Connor Chronicles not as enjoyable to me, although it grew on me.
Okay.
The other thing is, I want self-important voiceovers.
Check.
And I got that. I want road imagery and metaphor. I got that. I want some questionable time travel. I got that. I mean, it's time travel that if you think too hard about it, you can have a lot of fun thinking it through. But it's also the kind of thing that you can just sit back and go along for the ride and say, okay, what's it taking me? And that's what I get here, you know? And the other thing I wanted was, is it going to be exciting, and am I going to come out of it and just having enjoyed myself, you know? And I'm going to say right now, spoiler, but I enjoyed myself in this movie. And I found the action sequences kind of fun. Not 100% great, but kind of fun. And I also enjoyed all the callbacks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
This was a Terminator movie. It definitely fit into what all the other Terminator movies have kind of done, which is built on the one before and rewritten a little bit too, so that it could do what it wants to do, you know. And that's what I got here. And I went in expecting that. That's where I went, and it gave me exactly what I wanted.
Well, so. With that, let me ask you, how do you see, because what you just described, I think that holds true for almost all the movies and even the show, but I don't think Salvation fits into that.
Salvation does not fit into that. It didn't give,
okay.
It hardly gave me any of those things, honestly.
I know.
And that's, Salvation is kind of the weird one out. I did see that one in theater, but I almost didn't want to. So,
because you knew it wasn't going to be that.
Right, right. And I went because it looked like, okay, maybe I'm just going to get a good dystopic future kind of thing. And kind of got that. I mean, Salvation, basically, they've given us Salvation in every single movie.
Oh!
We get 10 minutes of that movie in every... Uh-huh. And honestly, I forgot that stuff was even in the first Terminator and the second Terminator when I back and revisited them years ago. It's like, oh, that's right. There's future stuff in here too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just went back and watched the Terminator and Terminator 2 earlier this week to kind of prep, because from what I'd heard, there was tons of callbacks, and I wanted to make sure that I knew I had seen the Terminator a couple times and Terminator 2 probably countless amount of times.
100 times, yeah.
Yeah.
Because
I know Laura hadn't seen them, or my wife hadn't seen them, so I wanted to make sure that she had seen them recently.
Can I just say, they did not make it easy to watch Terminator. I mean, I ended up looking at Prime, and I almost rented it on Prime, but I couldn't find it in stores anywhere.
It was on Netflix, I think, from the beginning of the week.
Okay. Oh, really?
I actually went and found it somewhere. And then as soon as we got done watching it, I was like, oh, I wonder if Terminator 2 is on Netflix. And I kid you not, I open up Netflix, and I'm not sure if everyone's familiar, but like, it has like the like three suggestions for you.
Recommended.
Like, the first suggestion is The Terminator. I'm like, seriously, I just spent like 15 minutes trying to find a place to watch Terminator online, and I could have watched it on Netflix the whole time. But then Terminator 2 was not there, so then I basically had to do the exact same thing I did for The Terminator. Whatever that was. Who knows?
I'm sure it was legal. I was surprised how hard they made it.
Yeah.
These movies should be on, you know, it should be on the end cap at Walmart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I figured that that Paramount, especially trying to harken this movie back so much. I mean, like I said, I think we'll use the phrase callbacks tons of times talking about Terminator Genesis, that I imagine Paramount was going to be like, look, remember these old movies? Watch them 100 times because you're going to love this new movie if you love these, right?
Jurassic Park was everywhere. You could not go anywhere without seeing Jurassic Park on the show.
And really, I think if you were not super familiar with the original Terminator, this would have been less enjoyable.
Yeah, I know. And like, one of the things that Ben had said was like, you know, you got to have Arnold in every movie. And Jared, you find out how old Arnold was?
Yeah. So Arnold is 67 years old, but he has a birthday coming up at the end of the month, July 30th. So he'll be 68.
Well, I'll send him a birthday card.
Yeah, please do that. He'll be watching for one from us, I'm pretty sure. We should probably just all sign it.
That seems right. I would imagine so. I mean, we are professional cyclists.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, so Arnold's like 67. He's reprising this role. I figured they would be cashing in full, doubling down. Lots of poker metaphors about making us watching these movies. No.
I can think of is, you know, Jurassic Park is universal and has been from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I do think that the other movies, you know, because there's one studio that I think is Carolco or something like that in the beginning that had the Terminator franchise, but then they went through some hardships and they sold, you know, and there's all like legal battles about who owned the franchise and who had it. And so it's possible that one of the reasons is, you know, there's another studio out there who's like, well, we don't want to give Paramount our money by promoting their movie with our movie.
Right.
That's the only thing I can think of, because
they haven't come to the Marvel. What's that?
I would figure there would have been a box set, you know, get all of them.
They haven't come to the Marvel Sony level of synergy yet that we hope one day all franchises will aspire to.
The Terminator is distributed by Orion.
Orion, remember them?
Yeah, you know, the little stars. It's so cute. Yeah. Let's see. I wonder what T2 is. I'm not totally looking this up right now.
You're just remembering really hard.
I'm remembering the hardest. Let's see. Carolco, Pacific Western, Lightstrom, and Les Studio Canal. Distributed by TriStar. That's Terminator 2.
Yeah, so different distributors, and then you have Carolco doing different things. And so, I mean, I guess I can see why there's not the synergy on all that kind of thing. But
they're going to sell more copies of their movie.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't understand. Like, it feels like almost... And lots of... Heck, you can read lots of reviews about Terminator Genesis. Lots of people are already talking about how this is just a cash grab by Paramount, you know, because the plot's incoherent, the time travel's... Like, it's all dumb Terminator time travel. Nothing makes sense. Everything's jacked up. The actors are terrible, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just cash. This is what's wrong with Hollywood, basically. And... I would be like, okay, well, then why are other studios not just being like having the Terminator 2 end cap, having the Terminator end cap?
Right.
Like, why aren't more people cashing in if that's all it is? Not that I totally disagree.
Terminator 2 is an evergreen movie. That's a classic. It's going to stay a classic as far as, you know, sci-fi, important sci-fi movie, but it's also fun. And I think it holds up well. The effects hold up well. The acting, obviously, I mean, you know, Schwarzenegger is, you know, part of what makes that movie that movie. But yeah, it's not a it holds up. That's the phrase I'm looking for.
I mean, surprisingly, I mean, it's like watching the first Alien movie. Like it's almost like a different genre. It's you know, Alien's a sci-fi movie. The Terminator is a sci-fi movie, but they're kind of like horror flicks.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get away with like limited special effects, more, you know, poorly lit, coming around corners, kind of scarily, kind of mood setting shots instead of actually having like big action set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And it totally works because, like I said, it kind of straddles a couple different genres. Whereas Terminator 2, it completely shifted. It's not really a horror movie. Terminator 3 is only a horror movie, and if you have to watch it, and like, you know, Salvation's dark, but it's not a horror movie. You know, like all this is, it's all sci-fi, time travel, the stuff that, you know, basically that made Ben's list for the most part.
Salvation was originally supposed to be a horror movie.
It probably would have been better if it just straight up stuck to horror.
I assume you guys heard about what happened with that film early in production.
Let's say we didn't, because maybe the audience members didn't.
So basically... go ahead, Ben.
No, I haven't either, so I want to hear
it. Oh, okay. So if you remember the plot of Salvation, it focused on a guy who volunteered for an experiment shortly... He was a prisoner, volunteered for an experiment shortly before Judgment Day. He ends up as a machine who's wearing a human body and thinks he's human and doesn't realize he's a Terminator. So it's like a machine with a real person's skin on, which is relatively horrific. The original ending of the script got leaked before they even started filming, and it caused a huge uproar among Terminator fans. So they rewrote it. So the original ending was that John Connor dies, and in order to keep the resistance alive, the Terminator human person like basically puts on John Connor's skin and then impersonates him for the rest of the war.
Okay, I do remember hearing that.
So that John Connor is a Terminator. And then when they changed it to was John Connor got shot in the heart, and so this Terminator guy sacrificed himself and gave his mechanical heart to John Connor so that John Connor could live. So now John Connor just had a Terminator heart. But the original was that basically, like, it's not really John Connor that wins the war. It's a Terminator who wants to be human again, who is basically keeping his vision alive.
I'd be kind of fine with that.
I would be too, because then that's who sent Reese back in time.
Right. And, I mean, look at what they did to John Connor in Genesis.
Yeah, well, That's just it. I mean, it's this. Yeah. It's a similar thing, only a little more mean spirited, I think.
I think I don't know how accurate it was. I just remember some people telling me, some people, that way I don't have to name them because I don't remember who they were, that there was some plot in Salvation where once the heart transplant happened, like, it was supposed to basically take over John Connor, and he was supposed to basically get up and kill everybody. And I was like, that doesn't really fit into the Terminator mythos that well.
Yeah, and it totally undercuts what the whole point of that was, which was that this guy, like, the ultimate human act is to give yourself up for another person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so he does, proving he's human even though he's a machine. What?
What are you talking about? Salvation has the worst ending of any Terminator movie, says reviewer. Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's like I own Salvation. It's like the only Terminator movie I own right now because my friend always owned T2, so I never had to buy it. But but I mean, like, I was like, this is like the best one. Like, this is the one I've wanted to see. And I remember going back and watching the CinemaSins for it that they came out with recently. And I was like, okay, tell me why this is dumb. Tell me why reviewers are like, well, 1 and 2 are great. 3's dumb. Salvation's forgettable. And we're finally going to get another one. I'm like, why? Why is Salvation dumb? And so I watched the CinemaSins, and it was basically nitpicky stuff that I'm like, really?
You mean like CinemaSins always is?
Well, sometimes I think they have legitimate gripes. Like, if you watch the ones for, like, the Jurassic World movies or the Jurassic Park movies, I'm like, some serious things that just don't make sense. But, I mean, like, if it's like you can't be nitpicky about science things when you're watching a sci-fi movie that you can't explain in the first place. And so, I never really got into it. I still think Salvation's a great movie.
Salvation does give you time travel, but it's time travel forward very slowly.
Oh, mind blown.
Oh, I see what you did there.
You've got the person in the present day who ends up becoming the Terminator later on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'll grant it that. I'll get that for my list of things that I want in Terminator movie.
Yeah, but it's still... Oh, and it does... So CGI Arnold doesn't count as Arnold?
There was CGI... I have not seen it since theaters.
Yeah, he has to fight one of the T-800...
in the factory, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yep. Well, click that off my list too, then.
All of a sudden, folks, Ben Avery loves Salvation more than any other Terminator film.
I do not love it more than any other movie. I was planning on buying it, though, if I could just find it somewhere. I was going to buy all of them, watch them all,
mm-hmm.
and didn't.
Like, are you listening to this internet? You're losing money here.
That's right. Ben Avery is ready to throw cash.
$25. I mean...
Well, okay, so we all, apparently, have enjoyed the Terminator series. At least up until this one. I mean, Ben's already kind of let the cat out of the bag that he did enjoy this movie. But so lots of the criticism that's been heaped upon Terminator Genesis is, one, that it wasn't necessary. And two, the only reason that it was really created was so they could make more Terminator movies by basically erasing the old ones. So they got, you know, this director, Alan Taylor, who's done lots of TV episodes for especially HBO series like Game of Thrones, Oz, The Sopranos, stuff like that. And they get Schwarzenegger back, and they,
There's something there. Alan Taylor is Thor the Dark World.
Well, yeah. He did Thor. Well, okay, so he's done one, like, notable movie.
At least that, yeah.
At least that, okay.
That's the one I know him from.
Well, and I'm not trying to discount Alan Taylor necessarily. They've gotten this guy who's done some semi-serious stuff. Like I said, because you're directing for HBO, you're not directing like a comedy on ABC or anything.
It's not Mike and Molly here, folks. Okay?
It's not Mike and Molly.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
It's not like they got someone who directed, you know, a Community episode to go and do, oh, wait.
All right.
Which was a great decision because Community is amazing.
Yep.
Yep. Network sitcom. But
okay. Well, it kind of breaks the mold. It's like saying oh yeah, those guys that wrote that one show Arrested Development for whatever.
Yeah. Well, and the Mike and Molly, obviously you bring that in and you're making a better case for it if you're bringing.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway.
You're welcome, Mikey. Forrest Harris with the assist.
Woo! I just had to bring up. I mean, if there's a Marvel connection, I'm gonna bring it up as much
I'm
as
fine
as
with that.
Yeah. Let the record show.
Because just in case all you out there didn't know, Ben Avery, host of Welcome to Level 7, the one-stop shop for things about Marvel things.
The Marvel Cinematic Universe.
There you go. Is there a better like tagline to that? Is there like a
The unofficial podcast of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Cinematic Universe is pretty much it. We're doing Dirt right now. Yeah.
So just in case, y'all check it out for real. But anyway, so they get they get all these people together. You know, Jack Courtney, who people think is like a real actor for some reason, and Jason Clarke and Emilia Clarke. And they throw them together in this movie. They get Doctor Who in there for some reason for like 5 minutes. And boom, we have a movie. Why do we have this movie? Is there a point to this movie besides rebooting the franchise?
Arnold. I put that out there for you that reboot the franchise, sure. But it's a showcase for Arnold.
Do you think Arnold's going to be in all these movies going forward?
I doubt it. I mean, I'm sure you'll see him in all these other movies, but he's the showcase for the show. I mean, you have special effects, you have that questionable time travel, you have questionable motives for the characters and stuff like that, but you've also got Arnold, and he's always been, he's not a great actor, but he is charismatic. He has screen presence, and he brings it here. And this is a, hey, we've got Arnold. Let's do another one.
All right. So JR, you think he's going to be highlighted?
So this is the first of a planned trilogy, and okay. Arnold signed on for all three.
Oh, okay. That's even better.
Yeah. Well, he got upgraded.
He did.
In one of the most telegraphed, not surprise, surprise twists of the film. Yeah. And that's saying something.
Chekhov's molted metal.
Yep.
I mean, as soon as they mentioned that there was no CPU,
and like, it needs okay, to know that's processor.
Get in there. Yeah, and as soon as he falls in. Well, but early on, when the T-1000 dripped some of the metal into the T-800.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's,
foreshadowing.
I'll take it.
Yep. I like it. Arnold is a T-1000? Shut up. Never thought I'd live to see that. I'm it.
This isn't even a comic book.
I know.
This is fan fiction. This is real thing. This is canon.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was like, this does seem like fan fiction. At one point, I was like, who wrote this? Like, for real, who wrote this?
Yeah.
Because doesn't it seem like in Terminator 2, if all the T-1000 really had to do to take over a T-800 was to just, like, go into its brain and reprogram it?
Just a drop in its ear.
I don't think it reprogrammed it. I think it just... It served as whatever wiring was broken.
Broken? Okay.
Yeah. So that its initial programming was still just, I'm going to go kill Sarah Connor.
Oh, my gosh.
That's my theory.
No, yeah, because speaking of JR's theories, JR, you've written you've written something that has a whole bunch of theories on it, especially with the time stuff that I want to get towards the end of the episode.
Okay.
Because I'm reading your time theory stuff, and I'm like, right now, questions, I'm like, okay, well, who did this? Well, who did this? So the main reason we have this movie is for Arnold. It's the reason people are going, because it's on Ben Avery's checklist.
And every Terminator movie has made a pretty good chunk of change. I mean,
except for this one, maybe?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, up until now, it's been a pretty safe bet.
Okay, so why are people going to see Jurassic World and not Terminator Genesis?
Because Jurassic World is more positive, I think. And it's more, it's got dinosaurs. Which dinosaurs brings in the young crowd. Time travel, not as much.
I was trying to make a dinosaur joke about Schwarzenegger, and I just couldn't land it.
Well, but now we're all thinking it.
This is going up against Inside Out as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's two quote-unquote family-friendly franchises with Pixar and the Jurassic Park movies.
We also had two spectacularly awful Jurassic Park movies and then nothing. And so I think there's been like a void. People that saw Jurassic Park when they were 10 or 12 or whatever have been like just waiting. And say what you will about Jurassic World, like the trailer did a great job of promising you all of the feels from the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guy who came on Strangers and Aliens and talked about Jurassic World with me, that's him. Just described him. He saw Jurassic Park when he was 10. And he said, because he listens religiously to Strangers and Aliens, because I'm like his friend or mentor or idol or something. But anyway, he said that Jurassic Park to him was like E.T. to me, where it just hit that perfect moment.
Yep.
And,
okay.
You know, just caught me at the right time in my life. And it just thinking about E.T. gives me warm feelings.
So, Ben.
My childhood.
Under what circumstances would you not go see an E.T. sequel?
If it was the Green Planet? I don't know.
No, I mean, like, is it the same thing? Like, you would at least give it a chance? You're going to try no matter what? Like,
I would be there, yeah. I would. I would. Because, yeah, I wouldn't be able to stay away from that. Unless I heard really, really horrible things, or they were really, really rewriting, you know, what the actual... me, you know, what was good to me about that first
like,
movie,
like that the E.T. aliens or what happens to the predators as they age.
Yeah,
I would go see that.
I would too, but it does depart from the mythology a little bit.
Or if War of the Worlds was the actual E.T. sequel, then
or like if
like we sent him back as an outbreak monkey.
There are so many good like robot chicken sketches right here. Well, I was thinking, like, what if, like, they get Shia LaBeouf to play E.T. in, like, the sequel, you know?
Well, I'd be there. I'd pick that in theaters. I don't know if I would like it, but I'd be there.
I scratch that. It's probably more of a Broadway play.
Spielberg, though. Spielberg and LaBeouf, they...
The beef?
Yeah.
They could... I don't know. I need to see more steady work from late seasoned... Spielberg.
I thought you were going to say late the beef.
Late the beef.
And then when you said seasoned, I was like, seasoned beef. Yeah, okay. Seasoned right beef.
So. Yeah, and really, we did get a sequel to E.T., and that was the Crystal Skull. I mean, that's... No, sorry, that's technically a prequel.
Nope.
Independence Day.
What's Independence Day 2? Is that the rounding out the trilogy?
Yeah, it's the trilogy right there.
Bro. Oh, my gosh. Oh,
Elliot's going to get into the cockpit of the fighter at the end and be like, I got this, fellas.
I think Jurassic Park was probably served a similar kind of purpose in my wife's life, because that's how she talks about Jurassic Park. She's like, came along at a certain time, and then we watched it like every week, all the time, and she was so excited for Jurassic World.
My wife also, like, she, mm-hmm. It almost wouldn't have mattered. Like, it would have had to have been, like what you said, Ben, it would have had to have been a train wreck for her to have not enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, I remember even Laura was like the more trailers they put out for Jurassic World, the worse and worse Jurassic World looked. And she goes, this is probably going to be terrible, and I can't wait to see it.
Yep.
You know, it just didn't matter at that point.
Yep.
So, but that still takes me back, so... Like,
so I think, honestly, a big problem with Terminator Genesis is that I heard a lot of people who couldn't figure out what the movie was about. They didn't understand. I mean, it's pretty high concept where you're...
But you're saying after seeing the movie, not before.
No. I'm
going.
Saying when the first trailer dropped, mm-hmm. and you have Kyle Reese, but it's Sarah Connor saying, come with me if you want to live. Like, they didn't want to put in the effort to trace how it was being rebooted, reimagined, reframed. And so I think there was a lot of like, that looks exhausting.
So do you think they're just looking at, oh, this is going to make my head hurt like that Star Trek movie?
Yeah, I mean, kind of.
But they didn't have faith that someone on the internet was going to put blog posts up explaining every time travel aspect in all the previous Terminators?
Maybe, I don't know.
Because that's the thing, Terminator to me is a time travel thing.
I'm with you.
This, yeah.
I loved it. When I saw the first trailer, I was like, whoa, this is... And actually, I wish they had not shown the second trailer where it shows that John Connor is a Terminator.
Oh, yeah.
Can we have a whole rant about how the trailers ruin the Terminator movies?
We've had a rant about how trailers are ruining most movies, and I think we've done that. I think you might have been on the show we did that for.
Yeah. I mean, the trailer ruined T2.
The the trailer ruined Salvation.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was in after the first trailer. I got it. I was ready. It was a time travel movie. I love time. Like, I loved Looper. I know a lot of people that were like, yeah, I didn't. That movie was way too confusing. I was like, I didn't think it was confusing, but I like time travel. You know,
you're like, but I'm not an idiot. So
no, it was time travel, right? That's like a thing.
Yeah. It's confusing.
You either like it or you don't. You know,
but the primary conceit of Terminator, first movie, we're sending people back in time to change history. Like that's the first thing they're doing. We're sending a Terminator back in time to change history, and so you see this trailer, and maybe if you're not familiar with Terminator, I guess maybe they needed to kind of spell it out, but. You see that they sent more people back in time and they changed history. You know, it's not too difficult.
It does also. I did appreciate that it finally, like always in the first several Terminator movies, right? You're like, why didn't they just send 7 Terminators back?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now you're like, yeah, they basically did over and over and over again. Apparently,
yeah.
Further and further back.
Yeah,
and I can't remember where I saw that. It might have been honestly in a. Like a role-playing magazine article, like how you can, you know, use Terminator in different role-playing scenarios, like Marvel. I mean, we're talking back in when there was only one Terminator movie.
Yeah.
And it gave the Marvel stats because I actually used Terminators in a role-playing game that I was GMing and the stats were horrible. And my, the superhero destroyed him. Like
that's
there were
amazing.
I think it was that where it was suggesting, you know, send more Terminators back in time, you know, earlier and earlier and earlier and that kind of thing. And it feels like that. Okay, this didn't work. You know, we'll go a little bit further. We'll go a little bit further. The question is, how did they know that it didn't work?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
that's where alternate timeline theory comes in, right?
And I think one of the struggles with this franchise is that they don't have a clear mythology of time travel. It seems like every time the property has changed hands, the new... whoever's in charge of the property at the new company decide. Cause like the whole point of T2 is that you can change the future. Like they stop Judgment Day. And then in T3, they come back and they're like, no, Judgment Day is inevitable. You can't stop it. It's always going to happen. And then by the time,
apocalypse.
Right. And so by the time you get to this one, they're just sort of like, yeah, whatever.
Well, and see, that's what I think is hard. Kenneth Moorfield, for all the bashing he does in his Christianity Today review of this movie, he does kind of point out how the fact that in the first Terminator, it's they keep it simple. They're like, we sent something back in time to kill somebody, so things turn out the way that the machines want. And someone else has got to send somebody else to fight that person. They keep it simple. You don't think too much about it. You just allow it to happen, and you move on. It's like a device that lets the movie happen. But then when you start making more movies and you keep using the same one, you start asking these questions that we're asking right now. Why not send tons of Terminators back? How do you know that Terminators didn't even work in the first place? You keep sending them back. Like, did you know that you had to send one back in the first place to create the thing so we would be born? And like your rules stop making sense when you start trying to elaborate on the rules that didn't make sense in the first place.
I have a phrase that describes the kind of time travel that we get in Terminator, and it's not a derogatory phrase because I wrote a whole 8-book series that uses this idea, but it's Saturday morning time travel. You know, it's there for the story to make the story work that you want to tell, and the changing time travel, I don't like that necessarily, but what you're describing for Terminator and T2 is exactly that. It is exactly what it needs to be to tell a story that people will enjoy and ask questions about fate. You know, that's the other thing. I need speeches about fate. That's another thing I'm going to check.
I remember that there used to be, before Terminator 3 and all, you know, the subsequent films, there used to be people who would have like meta conversations in TV that I was watching, and they'd be like, oh, what kind of time travel is it? Is this, you know, Star Trek time travel, or is this you know, Terminator rules time travel? And one was, you know, you go back in time and things don't change immediately, but they work themselves into their own continuity. And then there's like Star Trek continuity, when like something would go through some kind of time portal and everything instantly changed. And the only person who remembered was the person who went in the past.
Yeah.
And the future's immediately and forever changed. Unless somebody goes back in time again and permanently changes
back to the future too. Also,
or right? Back to future. That, yeah, back to future same. Time.
Yep.
And then there's DC Universe time travel, which hear me out here. Hear me out. All the rules are thrown out in these decades long universes. But here's the one thing you'll notice is that if there's a character named Superman and Batman, they're going to be friends and enemies. You know, their fates are entwined no matter what. And so you have Elseworlds where something, veers off one way or another. And if there's a Bruce Wayne and a Clark Kent, they're going to end up being friends. Or if there's just characters who happen to have those names, they're going to be friends. It's like the universe writing itself. And that's a Star Trek thing that I noticed in, I think it was in the novels that I was reading before Next Generation, where they would go back in time and things would change, but Kirk and Spock would be drawn together by the universe, and that's the kind of thing here. Skynet is like that thing.
And John Connor, it seems like.
And John Connor and T-800.
Yep.
And it's going to happen. It's just how is the universe going to write itself and correct what has happened with these meddling humans or artificial intelligences?
So I figure we can't be the only ones. So what is it about time travel that is so appealing? Is it just a cool context to write stories in? Or there's lots of things about time travel. Are we going to watch them all?
who doesn't like the idea that it's possible to go back and change something, fix a problem, get a do-over?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, I think there's something inherently attractive about that for most people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just that idea that you could fix things. And
what does that even mean?
So there's two things, right? I mean, one is the idea, okay, so I made a big mistake and I could go back and fix it, right? Maybe I quit a job right before the company exploded. Maybe I had some kind of a moral failing. Maybe who knows? Like, right, there's all kinds of things you wish you could. Maybe I chickened out and didn't ask the girl out and I wish I had and whatever. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Pick your movie. There's always something.
Yeah, you're describing the plot of Project Almanac now. Yes.
Right, 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 right. and so there's that on that one level. That's the, I wish I could go back and fix things. I wish I could go back because it'll make it better. But then on a deeper level, there's that whole like, that's too big for people, and there's almost like a hubris that goes into that. So you have like the butterfly effect or Project Almanac, where when you change something, it has this unforeseen domino effect, and it nearly always makes things way worse.
Yeah.
In time travel movies.
Yeah. And the other thing is also just the curiosity of going back and seeing things, historical fiction, that's a time travel thing, I want to see this other thing, and to go to the future or to go to the past. And then there's also what happens with time travel movies to me anyway, especially as a writer, when I do time travel stories is I use it as a spotlight for choices, how choices and you can look at it as the butterfly effect because every choice you make does have a butterfly effect. And because here's something else that bothers me about time travel is that how can two people have the same child that they would have, but their circumstances of, say, conception are different every time? Because you're talking about how many, sperm or not what?
Yeah, you're right.
Wrong phrase, but how many of them are there? And, to get that same one that's going to hit at the same time, but then it's supposed to happen a year later because time changed, and so you have these stories where it's like, oh, the people came out the same. They're just different. And so like evil Star Trek universe, those people in the evil Star Trek universe should not exist. Spock with the goatee should not exist because things are different enough that his parents would have conceived at a different point in time, even if it was just a day later or an hour later. And so that's something you just have to accept, though. And that's Saturday morning stuff. The story, so let's tell it.
Yeah, I think that, and that's what they addressed in, that one movie where that kid goes into the closet and...
About Time.
About Time, yep. I'm like, because you're going to lose you know, kids that have been born, they won't never have the same ones again. You can have other kids, but that wouldn't be. Oh, it's so crazy. So,
well, and, I mean, it's not, I had.
Oh, go ahead.
I just had, in Genesis, I had that thought about John Connor. I was like, well, now John Connor cannot become.
Yeah.
But they address.
Right.
They address it. They say, we are three people out of time. Or we are three, well, maybe it's four, but there's, you know, we're fugitives of time or something like that.
Right.
They shouldn't exist, but they do. Like you were saying, where you go back in time, change it, and who remembers? Just the person who went back in time and changed it.
Yeah.
Right.
I was actually hoping there for a second that Sarah Connor was just going to take a gun and like blow Kyle Reese away, and John Connor was just going to shrivel up and disappear.
And then she was going to get some dragons.
Yep. Then she would get dragons.
That's a really, really dark ending.
Well, I mean, because I was like, you know, I don't understand the rules of Terminator, because Terminator doesn't understand the rules of Terminator, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I was like, okay, it doesn't
stands the rules of Terminator.
Yeah, he does. I was like, whoa, quantum mechanics.
Oh, was it not weird? Anyone else having like Schwarzenegger try to explain like the most complicated things in the movie?
Yeah, Robot Schwarzenegger was the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
Every.
Well, he always was. Not just academically, but socially.
The smiling gag never got old for me.
Nope. Well, see, the smiling gag, I remember watching Terminator 2 and not watching like the director's cut or whatever, and missing lots of the John Connor Terminator interactions.
Uh-huh.
that all make the director's cut. And I remember it was almost like watching a different movie when I saw the director's cut.
Yep.
Watching the like the humanization of Arnold's T-800 in that one, and having just watched it, you know, coming and watching Arnold as Pops the T-800 in this one, I was like, wow, like I was really buying everything Arnold was selling me.
Yeah, totally.
So
he makes he really does. Say what else you want to say about anything else in this movie. You can't complain about him. I mean, I guess you could, but you'd be wrong.
So is there any, is it almost all time travel? Because I thought there's something about movies depicting human annihilation that I think is I don't want to say attractive, because it seems like the wrong word when you're talking about human annihilation. But just having, like, they deal with this
fascinating?
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating. Like, they deal with it more in Terminator 2 when John Connor's watching the kids, like, shoot at each other. And he just kind of turns and says, like, we're not going to make it, are we? Almost judging humanity.
So what I thought was interesting about what they did in this one was, by the time you meet Skynet, Skynet has been sort of raised by this like Terminator John Connor. And mm-hmm. So when they're like, why are you going to do this? He's like, what do you mean? Like, you're here to kill me. Like, what do you mean? Why would I defend myself?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, whoa, okay. Like that's messed up.
But they stop.
But that's what Skynet does every movie. Skynet is sending things back in time as self-defense. You know, it's war against humanity.
Yeah, but I guess the conceit was always that Skynet started it. Like, we turned Skynet on, and then Skynet nuked us. And this was more like, oh, for the first time, Skynet was like, you're trying to kill me. Like, you're here to kill me. I'm defending myself. You know what I mean?
No, I get that. I feel like it's...
But I hadn't thought of it that way until seeing it in this movie.
Right, yeah, me too. Right, and I was like, that's why I said it kind of caught me off guard. I was like, whoa, okay, Skynet. Hold on a minute.
well
like, that's messing with me.
But that's the thing. I feel like it didn't mess enough. I feel like they should have had that conversation.
Oh, dude, we got two more movies, okay? You got to pace yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, I like I said, this is where, you know, the Ben Avery list of overdramatic fate speeches
voiceover
should have come. Just, yeah, like they should have had this... Like this speech, right? Like this, convince Skynet not to kill everybody, and everyone could just like get out of the situation fine. But then they never have that conversation.
Because that there was it Matrix, and it didn't satisfy anyone.
Do you think there was a scenario in which Sarah Connor would have agreed not to destroy Skynet?
She's dead.
Or Kyle Reese for that matter.
Maybe if he was dead.
Maybe if Pops told him it was a good idea.
The inevitability of Skynet destroying the Earth. Or you know, starting the apocalypse.
Okay.
I mean, that's... If you know, it is 100% certain that this thing is going to destroy everybody. And then round up the ones that it didn't destroy. Which I don't understand why they had to round them up and put them in camps to be exterminated. Why not just...
Right. Yeah. Right.
Don't think about it.
Exactly. But if you can... It's going to happen, and so you're not going to stop until it's destroyed.
That's okay. Right. So there's no circumstance under which Skynet could convince them, hey, you started this, like, I'll call timeout if you call timeout. They're not going to buy it.
Well, see, I saw it more as going back to the conversation we had a little bit earlier, and we're talking about no matter what timeline you're in, no matter what you change in history, some things are inevitable. And I think that it says a lot, even though they don't really address it, that no matter what they change in time, you know, no matter how many times they send everything in the world back to do whatever, who they kill, who they leave alive, that there is this undeniable premise that if a machine becomes self-aware, it's going to judge that humanity needs to be eradicated based on inevitable actions that humanity will definitely take every time.
So let's talk about this then.
Okay.
The first two films establish this nice closed time loop, mm-hmm. where the entire reason Skynet is because it sent itself back in time. Right?
Okay.
It became its own fire.
Right. Because they create Cyberdyne creates Skynet with the CPU and the ARM from the original T-800 that Kyle Reese and Sarah kill.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But this film establishes that Skynet was an inevitability. It was something that the universe or history or whatever wanted to happen. So either way, like in this world where basically all of the time travel effects of Skynet are removed, it still I guess that's not true because John Connor still comes back. But if Skynet just hadn't invented a time machine in the first place, it seems like it might still have happened and then humans couldn't go back in time.
Yeah. Okay. So again, going back to the type of time travel, though, this is not a loop. This is a zigzag.
Okay.
You know, so you have that prime timeline, and they send back that first group for Terminator 1, and then that timeline changes. And so now you have the next line, and they send back, and now you have the next line, and they send back, and now you have and this is, you know, fifth, sixth line.
Right.
Where things happen that build on each other, causing changes, but the changes aren't enough to stop things, just to postpone the yep. apocalypse, and then cancel. Mm-hmm. The apocalypse. Which, by the way, I have not heard such a weak cancel the apocalypse speech than what John Carter gave us in the beginning. It's like, oh, come on, Idris Elba, he needs to be doing the speech yep. right here.
Well, yep. to be fair, Idris Elba needs to be doing all everything, the speeches. All the speeches. Yeah, so.
But anyway, I mean, that's the way I look at this, is a zigzag timeline where once you go back and change it, it's not an alternate universe. It's an alternate timeline. The other one is erased in favor of this new one, and then you keep going back and changing. That's the way I see it. Again, don't think too hard, though, is my theory here might completely break down. But
no, I'm with you. I buy it.
And so, yeah, nothing went back in time except for Kyle Reese, and then John Connor also went back in time. But John Connor went back in time, changed by the Terminators because of the last zigzag.
Yep.
And so that new Terminator was created because of the previous zigzag.
Yep.
And so all these different kind of this ladder effect of zigzags and changing and just this constant evolution of the timeline, constant. And so now we're in this next one. And you have the TV show. The TV show seemed to even do that.
So, yeah. Guys, I have to confess, I never saw the Sarah Connor Chronicles. Can you walk me through briefly, like, how does that impact this mythology at all?
Here's what it does for me. I don't know if your mileage will go along with this, but for me, it basically you have this timeline where things are happening, and then I'm going to be this is spoiling the end of season 2, which is the end of the series, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But the big climax cliffhanger at the end of season 2, getting there is fun. So I'm not spoiling everything, but at one point they use some more time travel and they end up in an alternate timeline.
Okay.
And that to me sets up some of the stuff we're talking about here with that zigzag timeline. Mm-hmm. And that those are just some of the zigs and the zags right there in the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, the Sarah Connor
It's hard, right? I'm not the only one. The Sarah Connor Chronicles.
JR jumping right in. It's tough, right? So the Sarah Connor Chronicles, to me, was almost like reading like an alternate universe comic. It was like, here's some cool ideas we had that could kind of happen in the Terminator universe, but we're not going to make it canon.
But it builds on T3.
It does.
Interesting.
T3, okay. And then there's some stuff in T3 that was revealed that they address in the TV show. But it's that zig, and
yeah.
I would place it between T3 and this one as far as the zigzags go. Salvation, I think, could fit in almost any of these timelines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
I don't know if it actually – I mean, again, if you sit down and think about it, maybe not. But I think it could fit in almost any of these – that 10-minute future glimpse. Salvation could be, like, leading up to that.
Yeah. So I mean, well, but that's how the TV show ended for me. The fact that it ended, like, on that cliffhanger-ish thing almost was like, well – Was it really that important to have happened in the first place? Did it really change anything? I mean, like, I know it tied in. I'm not saying it didn't tie in. It just, where was the zig? Did it zig when it should have zagged?
Well, the answer to your question there about the TV series is it important to itself? Because it's definitely its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
You enjoy it as a TV show that you don't have to have necessarily seen the movies, but... And that's where, because it was canceled after second season with a cliffhanger, the importance to itself isn't even there as much as it should have been.
Well, and that's part of my frustration with Genesis. I feel like, you know, like J.J. Abrams comes into Star Trek and he says, we're going to go back and we're going to reboot everything. And not do it in a way that's, like, super confusing. We're not going to, like, try to say some of these things are still... And some of them aren't. We're just saying we're starting back at the beginning and going forward. You might recognize some things along the journey, but it's all new. And Terminator's kind of, like, wanting its cake and eating it, too. It's like, you're going to recognize some things along the... Or we're going to try to reboot everything. Basically, because of what we see in Genesis, that's from the Terminator. So Terminator 2, 3... They don't happen. The Sarah Connor Chronicles don't happen. Right. It starts all that over. It still wants to pretend that it happened.
This is my zigzag theory, though.
All right.
Now, our characters aren't the same ones, necessarily.
I'm going to have to write this down. This is going to be like, you know, the Terminator Genesis and the zigzag theory.
Yeah, they're rungs on the ladder, you know. And so some of these characters are getting killed. Some of these characters are getting replaced. Some of these characters are having a different... timeline, and so now we have a new timeline where, you know, the apocalypse didn't happen in 2017 either, which again that brings up another plot hole for me where they're talking about no you can't go to 1997, you have to go to 2017, you have to go to 2000, and I'm just thinking, well, 1997 happens first, why not just go there first?
Yeah,
your time machine, you have 20 years to rebuild your time machine.
I don't understand.
And so go to 1997, see if she's right, and then
all right,
continue on your way. Not a big deal. It's like, okay, let's stop at the gas station, even though we know we're going to stop at McDonald's, you know, 50 miles down. But let's stop at the gas station and use the bathroom here. It's not going to hurt anything.
I don't argue with any part of that.
Did you guys see where the director of Genesis confirmed that the T-5000, which is the Matt Smith Terminator, which is Skynet, I guess, is capable of traveling through multiple timelines, and that that the Terminator universe is a multiverse?
Yes, I did see that, and that's... I don't know if that helps or hinders my theory. But... I did see that, and you know, we'll see in the future with the sequels what they actually.
So, do you want sequels?
I feel like they could stop here, except for that end credit thing, which was
completely unnecessary.
That was to say, okay, so Skynet is going to maybe merge with something else or use something else.
Yeah, but what was that?
Who knows?
Okay, so, okay. I just thought I was dumb. I was like, I don't understand what the big red orb was.
Well, it looks like he created, like, its own protective thing to protect from the blast.
I thought it was Skynet itself, that the red thing was Skynet, and then they pull the camera back, and no, there's Matt Smith, holographic Matt Smith, standing there looking at it.
And... Yeah, so I was unclear if that was supposed to be the T-3000, former John Connor, had survived, or I just did not understand what that was at all.
That could be. Matt Anderson from the Sci-Fi Christian, if any listeners don't know who he is, although he was on your...
He's been on a couple times.
Yeah, but he said, Ben, when you talk about Terminator Genesis on Real World, tell me about... Because he walked out before that end credit thing happened. And I just, when I walked out of the theater, I just texted him and said, end credit thing is stupid. Don't worry about it.
Love Ben Avery.
Yeah. It wasn't good enough to me to feel like it was doing anything. You know, like end credit for Iron Man 3, I actually kind of enjoyed that. It's goofy. It's ridiculous. It doesn't set up anything for, you know, any kind of future movies, but it's goofy because it's Tony Stark and Bruce Banner, you know, they're hanging out, they're being chummy. This one is just like, okay, this is supposed to set up something in the future, but it should tell me what it's setting up. If you're going to set something up, let me know what you're setting up.
Can I read to you what I've discovered?
Sure.
It says, during the mid-credit scene, we see that Skynet managed to survive the blast. The real Skynet survived under Cyberdyne's destruction. If you missed it, which apparently we all did, Skynet was represented as a red bulb, and the blue projection of the T-5000, Matt Smith, could be seen again. This opens the door for possible sequels. Okay, yeah. I guess.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think the entire post-credit scene was not trying to tell us what was coming. It was simply to tell us that it was not over, which I think we all got from that. Like, oh, okay, it's not over.
Yeah, but
it didn't do it well. It depending on what its goal was.
And that brings up the paradox of the Terminator franchise, too. Is that every Terminator movie ends with a happy ending, quote unquote, but with the foreknowledge, except for T2, a little bit. T2, you could end it there and they save the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's done. Skynet's done. But you do get the impression that, you know, did they save the universe or save the world? You know, did they? It's nihilistic with hope at the same time. All these movies, they end with this kind of happy ending, but then this kind of uneasiness that maybe things aren't perfect.
Right.
And I don't know if that's me bringing my knowledge of what comes afterward to it. Other than T2, I mean, T2 is meant to have a happy ending. That was at the end of the franchise. You know, why would they think about making another one? Because they already had two. Isn't that enough?
Not after that much money.
The innocent days of the 90s where two was more than enough.
But it still it still took some time before you got T3. Whatever. Was it Rising?
And it was, and James Cameron didn't do it, and it was with a completely different production company.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was in 2004, I'm pretty sure. So that's...
12 years later, right? Was T2...
T2 was 91.
91, okay.
Yeah. And then, so it was in 91, and they pretended it was 97, right?
Mm-hmm.
And T3 was 2004?
It was set in 2004.
So it was like, it came out like 2001 or something like that, I think. They always come out like a little bit before, like they always set it a couple years in the future, you know?
Yeah, I like that. Well, at least three of them did. Wait, what year was Terminator the first one? Because it takes place.
The first one came out in 1984.
Okay, yeah. So.
And the second was set in 1995, but it came out in 1991.
And the end of the world was 97. That's right. Yeah. Because they had to keep pushing it back because they're like, oh, well, people know Judgment Day didn't happen like 10 years ago. So Gotta keep pushing it back. Just pushing it back. JR, I wanted to answer your question.
Please do.
About if I wanted more.
Yep.
And, I mean, I would probably go see more, no matter what. Because by this time, I'm like, well, I can't be five movies and one series in and not finish it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I really want is I want a complete movie, and I would be willing to sacrifice time travel for this. Just in the future, some type of Arnold-led Expendables-type movie of them fighting the machines. And
so you want Terminator Salvation with a T-1000 Arnold?
I would be fine with that.
But that ends the war.
Yeah, it can end the war. I don't know. I want to live in that world a lot longer with a lot more action. And I want them to use Schwarzenegger like he's making Commando again, or something. You know, something ridiculous.
Mikey, he's 93 years old.
Well, he will be after July 30th, right?
Yeah. I want more movies in this franchise. I am fine with multiple timelines. None of that bothered me, and I enjoyed this one well enough. I actually like Emilia Clarke as Sarah Connor. I don't hate Jai Courtney. At least he's not Paul Walker. Yeah, I would watch more of these movies.
Can we talk about Emilia Clarke?
Yeah.
My goodness, there were times I thought I was watching Linda Hamilton.
Yeah.
It was crazy to me how much she looked like her. And it might have just been the hair. That might have been enough. But
they have similar bodies and physiques, mm-hmm. and faces even. I don't think that's out of line.
The face and hair. And mm-hmm. man, I'm watching this and just like, oh, this is kind of freaky, you know? Just how close she is, close enough that, you know, closer than any James Bond, or far closer than any, you know, thing like that, where they recast her really nicely.
Yeah.
Really nicely.
And I thought she did well. I thought she, I mean, so one of the fun things about T2 is seeing how different Sarah Connor is between the two, right? Mm-hmm. In the first one, she's like kind of scared and helpless. And in the second one, she's like scary. And I liked seeing the younger, you know, she's supposed to be, what, 20, I think, in 1984. The younger Sarah Connor, who is, like, doesn't need any help, is very tough. You know, I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah.
It was a natural, it felt natural. It felt like, you know, as much as they aged or de-aged Schwarzenegger, it felt natural to have her do the Linda Hamilton. It just felt right.
Yeah, she did the kind of the same thing Chris Pine did in the Star Trek reboots. Like, she played Sarah Connor, not Linda Hamilton playing Sarah Connor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm with you on that. Now, Kyle Reese, on the other hand, not so much. And I don't know how you can be. Is it Michael Biehn? Was that who played him?
I honestly couldn't tell you.
In Terminator, I think it was.
The first one?
The first
one. JR's good at the internet.
I think it's Michael Biehn.
I'm remembering hard.
That's right.
I'm remembering very, very carefully with my fingertips.
Michael, yeah, Biehn, B-I-E-H-N, Biehn?
Yeah, it's Biehn.
Okay.
And that's not at all what we were getting with whoever this guy was.
Yeah. Yeah, because I feel like Kyle Reese, it was really great in the Terminator, because he, you know, he wasn't like super ripped and like beautiful. Like, he was just like a guy who looked like he'd been trying to survive in the future in a war against machines, not eating very much, but being resourceful. But, you know, Jai Courtney comes back and he's like, "Hey guys, what's up? we just like bench press Terminators when we're not killing them, yo."
Yeah, bro.
That's my Jai Courtney out, I guess.
Is really good, Mikey. I was like, "Whoa, how did you book him for this podcast?"
That's what I thought. Now, but we all love you. Wait, is this the Storymen thing? It's like, "But we all love you, Jack Courtney. If you'd love to be on the podcast, we'd love to have you."
Big fans of your work, sir. Yeah.
Now the kid that played young Kyle Reese matched Jai Courtney. Nice.
So here's my thing. I think that they must have something planned for the sequels involving Terminators coming back to kill Kyle Reese. Is that in the movie at all?
What?
I could see that. I mean,
probably.
You've set up a group of people who are key players who... But here's the thing. What's the future of this now? So when does Skynet come into being? And is there another apocalypse that's going to be... There is no apocalypse, but Skynet still exists and now is going to send people back in time to kill them so that they can make an apocalypse? Or... I don't know.
No, Ben, I would say the real question is, what does it matter? Because what can Skynet do against a T-1000 Arnold?
Well, here's the real question. Who sent back that Arnold?
Yeah, that was going to be my last question before we transitioned. Any theories on who sent Pops back?
I am exceptionally nervous because of how they've foreshadowed things. We don't have any assurances that Pops doesn't have some kind of like kill switch that he's just going to like all of a sudden freak out and start executing.
Do you think Arnold would let them do that with the character, though? Because that's the whole thing with T2 is Arnold became a different person between the first Terminator and T2. So to play a villain was just kind of out of the question for what
he loves to play the good guy now.
Yeah. So that would be, again, a nice dark spin to have him just turn around. Okay, now I am T-1000 Pops. And they just said my kill word. Bagel.
They did a lot of foreshadowing.
You think they're foreshadowing that? Is that what you feel?
Yeah, I mean, because clearly the filmmakers know who sent Pops back. Like they have something in mind. And I don't know. I mean, the whole conversation that Kyle Reese has with Sarah about how this is what they're built for, they're meant to earn your trust and then betray you. I mean that, and then when Arnold's just like, yeah, I don't know, they erased all that stuff. okay. Like, I guess that's okay.
that's the similar conversation they have in Terminator 2 when, you know, they take the chip out of the T-800.
Yep.
When they're in their little shop and, like, you know, Sarah Connor's going to destroy it and John won't let him. He's like, no, he can learn. He's different. And she's like, they're Terminators. They only have one mission. You know, you may think it's nice now, but it'll turn on you. And then it's later that she's like, you know, I've had all these men in my life trying to be a father to John, and I had to realize that the Terminator was the only one there the whole time. It would never leave him. It would never betray him. It would give its life for him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So I killed it.
I don't know. So I felt like they've been down that road before. I just wonder if they want to, like, empire the second movie in this new trilogy, you know? Like, at the end, everything's terrible.
If it's a real trilogy, that's what they're going to have to do.
Yeah, and so then, you know, at the third one in the trilogy, they have to be like, Pops, we love you, don't kill us. And he's like, I'm a Terminator, I've learned to be human, I love you. And then T-1000 to everybody.
Silver tear.
Yes, you know, he's like, I now know why you liquid metal.
Made of liquid metal, so we could
cry. If this is a real trilogy, this first film establishes that they can, in fact, affect the timeline and prevent Judgment Day. In Act 2, that power is going to have to be shown to be not good enough.
It shifts.
We're going to get evil 1985 from Back to the Future.
All right.
Okay.
That's what we're going to get, some kind of like they did. It's everything's way worse now.
Okay.
We thought it was going to be better, but instead it's way worse. And then the third one is going to be some sort of like Matrix 3 where they figure out that they need Skynet and Skynet needs them. And
and then they make the dude that goes and gives John Connor his heart and salvation.
Right. Right. Yeah. And no, he no, he yep. and Kyle Reese give birth to John Connor.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. The only way we can stop the ETs is if we unite human and Skynet together.
And then it turns out that the Top Gun sequel is actually Independence Day 7.
Which I would probably still see. I must have this thing about just like the pseudo like war movie piece, because I really want to see like Independence Day 2. I want to see like the aliens like getting in a ground assault like against
You want to see humans. Battle Los Angeles.
Yes, I did. That's why I love Battle Los yeah. Angeles. I was like, yeah. most of this is terrible, but there's like the concept of it was interesting to watch. It was pretty scary.
So is it possible that
second series of Robotech is what you're for?
Is it possible that Live, Die, Repeat, or whatever it was called, Edge of Tomorrow, is actually Independence Day 9, Top Gun 4?
Works with me.
Oh, man. Or the prequel to The Matrix.
Yeah, and Terminator 13.
That's right.
This would be the ultimate, is if they were to say, okay, the Terminator franchise is actually a complete prequel for The Matrix.
For The Matrix, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Edge of Tomorrow is the film that bridges it.
And somehow, you guys, if Terminator and The Matrix are in the same universe, so is Bill and Ted.
I'd take that.
Yeah.
Bill and Ted 3 is actually Terminator 9 or Matrix and, 9.
Yeah, and, yep. Yep, yeah. I'm in. I believe it. Pixar Unified Theory, get ready for this one.
Wait, does that mean someone's going to resurrect George Carlin? Because I'd be okay with that.
Or Louis C.K. will just play him. Okay. They're basically the same.
That would work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, now that we've established Louis C.K. and George Carlin's likeness, what, if you can keep it simple, were the things about this movie that you did not enjoy, despite this movie admittedly being fun most of the time? Let's see, Ben, since it's been a year since you've been on the show, you get to go first.
Minor plot holes. That was just kind of like a niggling little, why didn't they just do this? You know,
minor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Relatively minor. Big plot holes, I think.
Yeah. Fine with the big ones. It's the little ones that they could have cleaned up.
Yeah. And Kyle Reese, not the greatest choice for me. I don't
know. Who would you have cast instead?
No idia. I have no idia. But
Shia LaBeouf, the beef.
Justin Long.
I'm not good at casting. I'm not good because I don't know names very well.
Yeah.
This guy is not what I would have chosen. Or if I would have chosen him, I would have said, okay, a little less beefy.
Andrew Garfield.
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt. No.
Brad Pitt from 12 Monkeys.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I would yeah, absolutely.
I would have cast Tyler Durden as Kyle Reese.
You know, Andrew Garfield, give him some meat, you know, so he's not quite so lanky. I don't know. I'm not good at the casting game usually, but this guy didn't do much for me. I didn't feel like he had much of a presence. He said the lines well, and he ran and jumped and shot nicely, I guess, but I didn't feel like anything.
No.
I didn't feel chemistry with him and anyone.
No.
Not even right. John Connor.
Yeah. Same. JR?
Yeah, you know, I like Jason Clarke a lot, and I just didn't care about him. And again, maybe that's because the trailer ruined it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had heard from some of the advanced reviews how hard they try in the first 5 minutes to make you care about John Connor. But I thought I would care more that he turned bad, and I didn't, and that was sad. So I don't know if that's his fault, if that's the film's fault. Didn't feel a lot of chemistry. I actually did feel a lot of chemistry between Jai Courtney and Arnold. Like, I thought the scenes where they were sort of, like, competing to see who would be, like, the man for in Sarah's life, I thought those worked pretty well. And that scene where he looked at the Terminator's hand was kind of glitching, and he kind of looked up, and you just saw like kind of the fear in his eyes that he's not going to be able to make it. And then Jai Courtney said, you know, old, or he said old, and Jai Courtney's like, but not obsolete. I was like, oh, guys, like, you got me a little bit. Like, that was a really, you know, like, it kind of just showed, like, they've had this kind of pissing contest the whole movie, but, like, they come together when it counts, and I bought it. Like, I don't know. I didn't buy his chemistry with anyone else, but that moment, I thought, like, really worked for me.
Yeah, thanks, Arnold.
I know, right? So
seriously, I mean, to me, that scene really worked well because of Arnold.
Yeah. You know, common denominator. Yep. All right. Well, I'm gonna say mine was. You had Matt Smith in this film to play Skynet, and he was in it for like 2 minutes.
Set up for sequels.
I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know, it seemed like a waste. And I mean, I get the sequel thing. I don't know.
When it showed him grabbing John Connor, I was like, was that the what? And then it was like over. I was like, wait a second.
Here's what was weird about that. I don't know. Did you guys see it in 3D?
Yes.
No.
I had to, because that was the only showing that I could make it to. And in that scene where he's kind of in the background and he looks, and he's supposed to be looking at John Connor, it looks like he's looking at you.
Yeah.
It was a little weird.
Yeah.
Because he's making eye contact with me. And it's like he was breaking the fourth wall. And I'm like, okay, so what is going on here? I had no idea who he was going to be. That was the one thing that, you know, was really a surprise to me, because the John Carter thing had been a John Connor thing had been spoiled. But he's looking at me, and I'm like, this is uneasy. And I was trying to figure out, is this just are they just off in his framing and in his line of sight, or is it meant to look like this? Because it was genuinely disconcerting to me. Because then they came back to it, and he does it again, and then he walks up to John Connor. But yeah,
guess who they're coming back in time for next time, Ben?
Ben Avery.
That's right.
I actually live in the Matrix, which is a term universe.
Okay, so what was just the best moments for you guys, Ben?
I did like the callbacks; they were fun. It did feel a little fan fiction-y because of all of them, but that was fun. The action worked well for me. I found myself getting excited in a number of the action sequences that weren't spoiled by the trailer. Anything that was spoiled by the trailer, I wasn't excited by, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But
you're just describing my experience with Fast and Furious 7.
Which I haven't seen yet, but...
Oh, I mean, have you seen Mad Max?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay, then Furious 7 is obsolete, but it's still fun.
Well, Fast and Furious franchise really fascinates me, because of the way it built around itself and turned
three. Right.
It's just the whole thing. It's stupid. And it there's nothing really good to me about it, other than this kind of weird franchise building that happened after the fact. And I'm just, anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Tangent.
But anyway, back to Terminator. I can't remember what I was talking about with that, but yeah, something that I liked.
Except for the parts that were spoiled by the trailer.
Yeah. With the action was good. And again, like I said, I had my checklist of things going in, and they hit almost everything. And yeah, it's not the greatest movie of the summer. It doesn't touch Mad Max. It doesn't come close to Ultron. And I don't think it was as good as Jurassic World. But I still, those are all those three movies I really enjoyed, and this one comes in under there. But it still comes in under the I enjoyed it for what it was giving me and for what I wanted out of it.
Yep. JR?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, my favorite part of the movie was every time Arnold was on the screen. Honestly, the fight
Can
between...
I second time change my answer to that?
The fight between old Arnold and 1984 Arnold was fantastic.
Yeah.
Just incredibly fun. I really like what they did with Sarah Connor a lot. I enjoy time travel movies, so I didn't mind that the plot was a little convoluted. I was able to follow it and have fun with it. Yeah, I don't know. But Arnold, man, I love watching actors who know exactly what they're doing and are having a blast. And that was what was happening in that film.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I thought the way they aged him and played with that was really clever. Like,
yeah, they could have been like, what? No, he's the same age.
Yeah, or, and, like, tried to make him up or whatever, and...
Yeah.
Next movie, they don't have to bother with it.
Right.
He's caught up to himself.
Yep. it was really a sharp storytelling strategy, and I thought it worked great. I thought it fit into the story. It didn't feel, like, forced. I don't know. I enjoyed it a lot.
Well, I would say you guys have mostly hit on my favorite parts. I just remember, like, no, like, especially since we just watched The Terminator and Terminator 2 the same, like, you know, the earlier in the week, I caught so many more callbacks that I don't think I would have. And I remember there was at least more than once when Arnold was doing something, or the T-800 Pops was doing something, and I just kind of stopped and I rolled my eyes and I said, oh my God, that is so dumb. Okay, this is going to be great. Like, it was like my mind was telling me something, but my heart overrode it. So
my mind is telling me no.
So it just didn't, you know, I realized at the moment I care.
My body is telling me yes.
Ooh, I'm feeling good right now.
Yeah. It's so good. It's so funny.
So Arnold.
I felt the same way in Mad Max Fury Road the first time the portable soundtrack came on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Same way. I was like, this can't. Okay, yes, it does work. It works
well,
every way.
It's similar because, and like I talked about this in the Mad Max episode, the world that was built around the portable soundtrack was so incredible that even though in any other circumstance the portable soundtrack should have been dumb, it was not.
Right.
In this one, I still think some of the things that were happening were dumb. I just didn't care that they were dumb because I was like, it's going to be more fun for me to enjoy this than to think about how dumb it is.
Yep.
Which is a slight difference. It's just the difference between here and here. Neither of which can you see, but I tell you, it's not very far. It's the difference. It's the difference between freezing cold and scalding hot on your shower nozzle. You know,
you jump, like, away from both of them.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, ah. Oh yeah. So, any final thoughts? Anything else you want to say before we wrap this up, guys?
I went in with exceptionally low expectations because of all the critical reviews. It has, like, mm-hmm. it was, at the time I saw it, it was sitting at 25% on Rotten Tomato. I'm sure it has not climbed higher. And that, I feel like that was the right way to do this. Like, if you're going to go see it, go in with really low expectations and you'll have a really good time.
Oh, we're at 27%.
27%. So, I mean, I honestly think it was better than that. I don't think a 27 is warranted, but go in expecting a 27. You won't be sorry you did.
Just get a 49. No, I went in with kind of, I didn't know what to expect. So I was going in expecting to not like it or expecting it to be mediocre. And I was pleasantly surprised and I enjoyed the trip. We didn't even talk about the idea of technology and the fear of technology that all these movies are about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which makes them kind of that horror movie kind of thing, but the technology is our downfall. You know, so what do we get in the early 90s? We get nuclear annihilation. What do we get in, the 2015? We get an operating system.
Yep.
You know, we get a killer app. I've been waiting all episode.
Yeah.
Genesis, the killer app. But, and the other thing is I had flashbacks to Sega Genesis. Once I realized, Genesis, is that operating? Oh, and I'm just, in my mind, I'm just hearing the commercial over and over again. Genesis does what Nintendo don't. I can't sing it.
But dang.
Genesis does what Nintendo don't.
Straight burn.
It just kept burning in my head.
I didn't actually realize it was an operating system when they kept unpackaging it. I was like, wait, are they serious? They're going to take over the world with Sega Genesis?
Yep.
Like,
can we? Okay, my least favorite thing in the film. I remember it.
I think I know where you're going.
That they're like, this is the best operating system. It runs your phone. It runs your tablet. It runs your PC. It runs your car. And the military lets us run all their missiles with it. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, and they just kind of went. I mean, that was one of those things that, like, it had to for the plot. But I would have much rather, like, Skynet comes online and hacks the military system. It's a computer, so I am more than willing to give it that suspension of disbelief. Much easier to believe that a sentient computer could hack into a non-sentient computer than that the government would just be like, sure, you're basically like Apple and Google. You can have all of our military secrets.
But wait, well, you saw, though, Ultron. A sentient computer cannot hack into those. Because there's another sentient computer, you know, blocking it. But
that's right. And that's John Connor, the Terminator. He's been secretly a good guy the whole time.
He's good Skynet.
Yep.
He is good Skynet from the future.
Yep.
I honestly thought you were going to say, JR, that it was impossible for us to believe that Genesis would run the missiles because you saw John Oliver report on what the actual status of our missile launchers is like. And if anyone wants
like,
to be...
it's like Betamax technology.
It really is. If anyone wants to be scared to death about the world we actually physically live in today, then you can watch, you can probably find that on YouTube, and it shows like people having basically no security and like takeout like guys wandering into like nuclear missile silos. Because there's no security.
Yeah, so basically Skynet comes online and has to find a human who's willing to get it a 5.5 disk drive so that it can like hack into the missile defense.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Not scary at all.
I'm gonna say the spelling of Genesis.
That also annoyed me.
It's really
especially every time I had to type it.
But then when it became an operating system, I was like, yeah, they're all spelled stupid. Like everything on the internet. I don't know, man. Like we're running out of dumb ways to spell stuff easily dumb. It's gonna get a lot of diminishing returns. Things are gonna get spelled increasingly more stupid by 2017. Who knows?
I say most people just communicate with emoticons now.
Yeah,
they don't have to spell.
Yeah,
anything.
We're lucky it wasn't like pile of poo, American flag, firework. Like
that would have been the best.
Terminator. Those? I don't. Huh.
Terminator heart, cat,
yeah.
Cat, pile of poo.
Heart.
Thumbs up.
Terminator part, cat.
It would have appealed to a much younger generation.
Right.
Anyway. Oh, sometimes we talk more reviewy on this show. Sometimes we get a little deeper, and sometimes we just have fun. And no matter what we do, I appreciate people taking the time to be a part of it. So I want to let you, the audience, know how you can follow what Ben Avery and J.R. Forrester are doing outside of this show. So, Ben, what is it that you spend most of your time... well, not most of your time, but what is it that you spend your time doing that people can follow, and how can they do that?
Well, you can find my podcast, StrangersandAliens.com, WelcomeToLevel7.com, and ComicBookTimeMachine.com. Those are all three podcasts that I do about three pretty different things, but all in the same wheelhouse. It's all geeky stuff. And Strangers and Aliens is probably closer to what real theology here is, but Comic Book Time Machine is just having fun talking about comic books, and then Welcome to Level 7 is that Marvel Cinematic Universe thing. You can also go to benavery.com, which is a pretty terrible website, but it talks about comic book writing, and you can order comic books there that I've written, graphic novels and that kind of thing. Yeah, and then Facebook, we have Facebook presences for all of those podcasts. So
awesome. JR.
Yeah, I'm also on several podcasts that are part of the Norval Rogers podcasting network. So things like Story Men, probably the two that real world people would like the most are Story Men and one called Don't Split Up, which is a horror film podcast that I do with my wife and a couple of my friends. You can find all those at NorvalRogers.com, which if you can't remember that, it's Shaggy from Scooby-Doo's real name. So just Google that and you'll get there. yeah, that's the best places to find me. I'm on Twitter and Facebook and all that, and I love talking about all this stuff. I love hearing about how I'm wrong about movie theories. So please, let's talk about all that stuff.
Yeah, I might have to go back and I'll make sure I link to those Terminator timelines, even though they're not the zigzag timeline, which I think we mostly settled on, but that's fine.
They were still drawn with a lot of love.
They were. Yep. They were. I was like, JR spent way more time on this than
it's probably warranted. Yep. Yeah, once I saw the box offices, I was like, man, no one saw this movie. Why did I spend all that time drawing those timelines?
I was looking at those timelines and just thinking to myself, Doc Brown drew these.
Yeah!
Excelsior. All right, so you can follow me at Physification on Twitter. You can follow the show at Real World Theo. If you'd like to know more about Real World Theology, if you haven't already, then visit our website, realworldtheology.com. Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. Look for new episodes the 1st, 10th, and 20th of the month on iTunes or Stitcher. Subscribe if you enjoy it. Review the show. Leave some feedback. Tell your friends. Let's get more people involved in the conversation. And as always, we're so grateful for our excellent guests. So please follow them on social media and around the web. All their contact information, websites, podcast links will be in the show notes at realworldtheology.com. And meanwhile, we're so thankful for you, the listeners, for taking time to make us part of your week. So until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
I got things to talk about, though.
Ben's got things to say.